Welcome to the Relative Paths podcast. We're a podcast about web development, web design, and things of that nature. I'm Mark Phoenix.
And I'm Ben Hutchings.
We've got an exciting episode for you today. A couple of episodes ago, we talked about some of the things that were eventy in 2016. And what we're doing now is we're looking forward to some of the things that are coming up in 2017 for us web developers. And we're going to be focusing especially on Grid, as that's going to be quite impactful. If impactful is a word, is that a word?
It'll do.
That'll do. And so to help us, we have who must be the hardest working person in the web today, Rachel Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Hello, good to be here.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us. So you do one or two things in the web industry, don't you? So could you tell us about a few of the things that you're involved in at the moment?
Okay, well, the day job really is as one half, so I'm a co-founder of Perch CMS, so that's kind of my job. It's a product of the company that I founded in 2001. So I've been self-employed for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of mostly what I do. On paper, that's mostly what I should be doing. I'm also an advanced expert to the CSS Working Group, so I do CSS-y things, mostly concentrating on layout. And I do quite a lot of writing and speaking, mostly on CSS stuff, but sometimes on businessy things as well.
Sure.
So that's, you
fly around to quite a lot of conferences internationally, don't you?
Yes, yeah. I do a fair few. I think I did about 30 events last year.
30, my goodness. You must have enough air miles to get you to the sun and back by now.
Yeah, it's great, yeah. Actually, normally I fly other people around. It's like, you know, I end up flying my daughter around on my air miles, because when it comes to like me not having to travel, the last thing I want to do is get in a plane and go somewhere else, you know.
Good stuff. So with Perch then, is it just you and Drew still at the moment, or...?
It is full time, yep. That's the two of us. It's our product. We sort of occasionally have other people doing things. Both of us are developers, so if we need any design doing, we tend to find someone to do that and to help us with that.
Righto.
Yeah. So yeah, but it's, I mean, really, it is just the two of us full time.
Sure. And about your work with the CSS Working Group, so what is it exactly that you do with them?
Okay, well, I'm an invited expert. I mean, essentially anyone can get involved with CSS. The standards process is open. It all happens online. All of the specifications and so on are in GitHub. So anyone can go along and raise an issue, or even, you know, do a pull request if you have an example or something to add to a spec. I've been kind of hanging around and doing that sort of thing for years. And eventually the working group, I don't know, decided I was better on their side of the fence than sort of outside throwing stones or something. And so invited me to be an expert, sort of invited expert, which is it's a kind of role for people who aren't employed by a company that's a member of the W3C. So right. Most people on the working groups, they work for a browser vendor typically, or somebody else who, you know, uses CSS in some way or implements CSS in a browser. And so most of the people who sit around the table at those meetings and who are on the weekly conference calls and things actually kind of work for usually a browser vendor, but other people as well.
Okay.
So there's a few of us who don't. And the only real route to get people onto the working group who don't work for a company who's a member of the W3C is as an invited expert.
Right, okay.
So there are a few of us who don't work for anybody, you know, we're just sort of independent people. And we've been invited on to give our input because we've got specific input that, you know, wouldn't be brought to the working group otherwise.
Okay. And so do they see you as kind of bringing the sort of developer perspective?
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's very much how I see my role there is, you know, I travel around, I talk to developers when I'm at conferences. I also talk to developers who are using Perch. You know, I kind of deal with this whole range of people who use CSS, from people who really, you know, are struggling to write the simplest of CSS through to people who are real experts. And I see all of those people all the time. And so I try and bring that. And it means that, you know, when there's something we're discussing in the working group, I can say, oh, well, you know, I'll ask people, I'll find out. And I'll often just I'll stick it into a presentation, or I'll know someone who I think, oh, you know, they know a lot about that subject, I'll go ask them. And so because I've got those connections, whereas someone working, you know, implementing a new CSS spec in a browser, they probably don't have those contacts. You know, they know lots and lots about CSS and they know lots and lots about browser engineering, which I don't.
Yeah.
But they don't have the contacts in the web industry to be able to just, you know, hop on Twitter and say, hey, you know, what do you think about the name of this property? Which I can do and get a whole load of responses. Mm. So that's kind of why there's people like me hanging around. It's essentially a voluntary role, but it's doing stuff that I kind of do anyway. CSS is like my weird hobby. So you know, and it's, I find it very interesting. I find it interesting to work with people who, at that level, and the discussions are fascinating to me. I'm a massive nerd though. So
so how did you get started off as a massive nerd then? So what was your route into web development?
So I've been doing this for years. I'm really old. I started doing this in 97, well, late 96, when I was pregnant with my daughter. So she is going to turn 20 this year. My background is dance. I trained as a dancer. I worked in the theatre. And when I was pregnant with my daughter, I ended up with a computer with an internet connection. It was kind of an accident. I really wanted a word processor because I thought I could take in typing to earn money while I had this baby. That was my grand plan. I ended up a sort of web designer. but it was really early days for the internet and for the web. And I mean, literally, you could learn everything you needed to know to build a website in kind of a couple of days. Wow. And you were building websites because there wasn't very much. I mean, I predate CSS, really. There wasn't CSS in, you know, in the browsers that I first used. I've kind of grown up with it. I started building websites and all of a sudden I was like this person who had this magical skill because everyone wanted a website at the time. You know, it's like it was the new thing to have a website. I mean, they were all terrible. But, you know, so I started building sites for people rather than doing typing. And it's kind of just grown from there. You know, I just learned the next thing that came along.
Yeah.
I saw people doing interesting things with JavaScript, so I wanted to learn JavaScript. I saw people doing server-side stuff with Perl, and so I taught myself Perl.
The rise and fall of Flash as well, I guess.
Yes, yeah. So it's kind of just always just been, oh, you know, here's something that looks really interesting to me. And it's usually because I want to do something. It's like, you know, how do I achieve this end goal? Oh, well, I need to learn this thing. So I'll learn the thing. And that's really just how it's always been and still is, really.
Okay.
I just kind of poke around and learn things.
Yeah, so the conventional route into web development then from dance.
Yeah.
We've all done that.
Yeah.
So your love of kind of finding out new things and just kind of getting involved in new specs, is that what led you on to do so much work with Grid then?
Grid was interesting because I sort of heard about it initially from Bert Boss, who was doing actually a presentation in French at a conference I was at. Now, my French isn't great. I can read French quite well. I can't really speak it or listen to it. But I was watching his demos and he was demonstrating some very early sort of grid-like stuff in that demonstration. And then there was an implementation in IE10. And the reason this interested me was when I was a Web Standards Project member, I was there as part of the Dreamweaver task force. That was kind of what I was doing, along with Drew. And we were kind of like the worst superheroes in the world, going and working with Macromedia, who had Dreamweaver at the time, on their beta to try and make that more standards compliant. But what interested me about Dreamweaver was this kind of visual way of working with layout.
Mm-hmm.
Which was terrible because it had kind of come from the nested tables thing, which Dreamweaver was great at. And then it got onto sort of CSS positioning, and that didn't really work. You just made a horrible mess, a horrible sort of absolutely positioned mess if you tried to do CSS for layout in Dreamweaver. But just this idea that you should be able to see your layout and move things around kind of interested me. And when I saw Grid, I thought, oh, this is like that. And there's something in that that, you know, allows us to do things maybe a bit more visually, ultimately. And that was really where this all started. And then it sort of took over 5 years of my life, because that's really how long we've been talking about Grid and how long it's been in development. It's been a kind of long journey to get it to this point where it's about shipping browsers.
Okay. So did your work with GRID, was that part of what got you onto the CSS working group, or kind of did you have much kind of interaction with them, the powers that be, about it?
I was chatting about it and I was writing things. The thing was, I was, as new stuff was going into the spec, there was a point we had this sort of implementation in IE10. And then the spec changed and there was no implementation of the new spec. And so I started kind of imagining what it was going to be like and just writing examples as if it worked, mm-hmm. and putting them on a blog and saying, well, this, I think this is how it's going to work. And at the same time, there was, the implementation was starting to be done for Blink. So there was that's been done by a team at Egalia, who are an open source consultancy. It's not actually been done in-house at Google. So I kind of knew that was happening and I'd spoken to them a bit. And so because I was writing up these examples that couldn't possibly work yet because there was no implementation for them, every time I got something wrong, one of the spec authors would go, oh, that's not right. It's going to be like this. And I'd be like, all right. But then it was interesting to them that I'd misinterpreted the spec, because the whole idea of a spec is that you shouldn't be able to be misinterpreted.
Yeah.
As a sort of a clued up web developer should be able to read the spec and understand it. So that was kind of really where I started talking to people on the working group about GRID, because I was interested in it. I was the only person who was really writing about it, sort of in the web community. They were obviously interested in the feedback I had, because it showed how the spec was progressing. You know, it was a different point of view. And so that's really where it came from. And then there were various things that I thought ought to be in the spec, specifically something to do the grid gaps, the gutters between cells. And I kind of advocated for that, and eventually that got put into the level one spec. And so, yeah, it was just this kind of this discussion that, you know, this dialogue that was back and forth as I was poking around because I was interested in it.
That's interesting. I would have expected more people would have been sort of interested in it, because from just looking through the tutorials and specs myself, it's quite exciting, like what we could potentially do with it. So at this point, actually, it might be good for us to sort of dig into some of the specifics. So then with GRID, I mean, what problems is it trying to solve? What is it trying to do for us?
Okay, so most people are probably familiar now with Flexbox, and Flexbox is essentially a one-dimensional layout method. And what that means is you're kind of laying things out as a row or as a column. So you can obviously do your flex direction row or flex direction column. Where it doesn't really work, and you can kind of do it, is if you want to lay things out in strict rows and columns. Because you get this thing where if you use Flexbox, maybe you've got three items on a row, and then it wraps onto the next row and there's two items. And the default flex behavior really is going to be to spread the space out on row two between the two items. Mm-hmm. So to make Flexbox behave like a grid, what you have to do is essentially disable some of the flexibility of it. You have to set widths on things like you would with floated items. Because it hasn't been designed for making a grid, because things that are grids are two-dimensional. You've got rows and columns at the same time. And that's what grid layout does. So you get a lot of the sort of flexibility that you see in Flexbox and the space distribution and so on, but it kind of all happens in rows and columns at the same time, which is quite a key difference. And there's various things that, you know, that are quite difficult to do in something like Flexbox that are completely trivial in Grid because of that ability to say, you know, this thing is covering these rows and these columns. So it's kind of the other way round from Flexbox. With Flexbox, you say, I've got some stuff and I want it all to share the space evenly. With Grid, you say, I've created a grid and I'm putting my things into this fixed grid. So you kind of work in the other way round.
Yeah, sure. It's interesting because I think in hearing other people talk about Grid, one of the first things that they tend to ask is kind of, why do we need this? Because we've got Flexbox. I think people sometimes see the two as kind of almost competing specs, because sometimes people have been using Flexbox to do the kind of things that a proper grid spec would do. But how do the two of them work together?
Well, I mean, typically there are quite a lot of things you could use either spec for. But typically what I'm finding as I'm building things is that it really does come down to that one or two dimensional thing. If I want to line things up in two dimensions, then I need grid. Mm-hmm. And if you're starting to sort of set widths on all your flex items, and kind of restricting it in some way like that, it's probably a case that you want to use Grid. You'd be better off using Grid because Grid deals with that and it deals with it from the outside in. Mm-hmm. So whereas, you know, when you do have just, you know, stuff like bunch of navigation items, things that you just want to kind of display nicely, and maybe wrap if they need to, Flexbox is really good for that stuff. But yeah, I think that, you know, there's as with anything, there's never kind of one perfect right way to do stuff. And I think as once we've kind of got both in browsers, it's going to be a case of, well, you know, which works best, which is going to solve this problem for me. And you do find that you end up using Flexbox for, I kind of feel like Flexbox is for the sort of the smaller bits and pieces, you know. I just want to separate these two things. I want those things shared out evenly. Little bits of UI stuff, Flexbox is great for.
I love it for navigation and also things like social media icons and things in footers.
Exactly. It's that sort of stuff. And you could do that stuff with Grid as well if you wanted to. But I think it's that 1D versus 2D thing is really the way the decisions are made. You know, if you want something to line up in columns, but also to span rows, for instance. So, item A is twice as tall as the other two items. You know, that sort of thing. That's a Grid thing.
So with things like floats, we've often like pushed them beyond what their original intention is, just to solve problems. And I find I've been doing that a little bit with Flexbox, because one of the nice things Flexbox has been doing for me is sticky footers. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to do. So I think I've been tempted into pushing it towards using it for whole site layouts. Is that something that you've seen at all when you've kind of been out there in the wild? Sort of people pushing Flexbox to sort of do things that hopefully Grid's going to be doing for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not surprising. I mean, in an ideal world, we'd have had them both come through, you know, as a layout system, as these two things. But then, you know, a lot of the things that have been learned from the Flexbox spec have informed the Grid spec.
Sure.
So, people are going to use what they've got. You're going to use the tools you've got, which is why, you know, we've been doing things like using display table or inline block and sort of dealing with the problems that those things have, because we use the tools we've got. And I'm sure, you know, once Grid comes out, people are going to say, oh, you know, it doesn't do this, it doesn't do that, and find ways to hack around it, because that's what people do. Mm. And really, that's how the web develops. It's how we get new stuff. You know, one of the things that I like to do is look and see, well, what are people trying to do with these specs? What are developers actually trying to make? And how do we bring that back into, you know, make that into an official spec? How do we make that something that people, you know, can actually do with CSS alone? A really good example of that would be something like masonry.
Right.
Everyone thinks that Grid ought to be able to do masonry. And masonry is not really a strict Grid. It's kind of a weird hybrid of Flexbox and Grid, the way that the things sort of work out the space they need. It's not something that we can just do. You can kind of get relatively close. You can get a kind of masonry-ish layout with a couple of tricks. But it's that sort of stuff. I'm like, well, we don't have a way of doing that now. Should we have a way of doing that? So seeing what people are doing, what they're hacking around with, how they're bending these specifications to get the layouts they want, actually can then inform, you know, what goes into CSS in the future.
Excellent. So in terms of then how people can learn this, how do you find how have people got on learning it? Because I guess people are using kind of pre-built frameworks and things like that to achieve Grid effects. Mm-hmm. In terms of the learning curve for something like that and the learning curve for Grid, how do they compare?
Grid's surprisingly straightforward. When I do sort of workshops and things, and when I teach Grid, people are normally like, oh, wow, is that it? You know, that's all I have to do. So I think it's actually a lot simpler than, it's certainly a lot simpler than a lot of the frameworks and things that people are using.
Mm.
So you know, if you start kind of at the beginning, if you start at the simplest examples and just start building things up, I mean, if you look at the entire spec, it looks absolutely terrifying. But then specifications do, because specifications are written for lots of different people. They're not just written for web developers. They're written for people actually implementing the specification in a browser. You need to know an awful lot more about Grid if you're going to, you know, build a browser than you do if you're going to build a website.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually just sort of, you know, well, how do I create a Grid? And how do I place items on that Grid? And just work through those steps. It's actually very, very straightforward. And there's an awful lot that mirrors what Flexbox does. For instance, all of the alignment stuff is exactly the same, really, as Flexbox. There are slight differences because of the fact you've got two dimensions. But, you know, if you know how to align things in a Flex container, then you pretty much know how to align things inside your grid. So that's all very similar. And I think if people have been using Flexbox, they're going to find, oh yes, you know, I can kind of understand what's going on here.
Yeah, I noticed that actually from reading through that it kind of, a lot of the terminology seems quite familiar from using Flexbox. I mean, back to Flexbox though, I mean, are lots of people using it? Because I sort of just in looking around, even with some fairly newly built sites, I've been quite surprised at how little of it I see. What's your experience with that?
Yeah, I think people got burned really with Flexbox because we had this. The story of Flexbox ending up in browsers and Grid ending up in browsers is kind of two very different things. Mm. Flexbox was kind of the last thing that went out with the vendor prefixes. So we kind of had this version of Flexbox that turned up and then the spec changed. But that version of Flexbox was already in browsers. It was prefixed, but it was in browsers, so people were using it. And then the spec changed and we ended up with this other version. In fact, we ended up with kind of three versions of Flexbox in browsers. And I think that gave it a bit of a reputation for being flaky. Right. Because people are like, oh, well, I used Flexbox and then it all changed and I had to redo it. And there's all these tutorials on the web that aren't correct and, you know, what's going on. And that's because people were implementing, you know, they're building sites on an experimental specification, and how we used to put out experimental specifications was with vendor prefixes. Grid has been developed behind browser flags, which means that you can't use it in production because you can't tell everyone who uses your website to enable experimental web platform features in Chrome. So really, as the spec changed, the spec has changed massively over the last 5 years. Mm. Yeah, the only person who had to rebuild anything was me, you know, because it was like, you know, it was, there were several times I sort of had to rebuild a load of examples. Oh, you know, but there was nothing in production. And I think that's part of the issue with Flexbox is people have got quite scared to use it. Is it going to change again? You know, and the thing with Grid is it's going to land. And I mean, if you play around with the Firefox and the Chrome implementations, they're pretty much the same at this point. And they're pretty much complete. So we're going to get this in browsers and it's going to just work as per the spec. There are very few places now where it's not working as per the spec and it's not working the same as in the other browser. So it's a very, very different story. And I hope that will mean we'll get sort of faster adoption of people using Grid than we did for Flexbox. And also hope people will start to have more confidence around Flexbox and realise that, yes, this is actually very well supported. And you can use Flexbox really as a kind of a fallback for your grid layouts for browsers that don't support Grid, because so many browsers now do support Flexbox.
Right. Oh, that's interesting.
I think it's with Flexbox, two things that were notable for me were making sure I had auto prefixes set up properly, depending on what sort of build tool I was using. That suddenly made it, just remembering that it just does need prefixing in so many places for sort of a wider audience. And also I'm quite a fan of the Foundation CSS framework, and they released a Flexbox version of their grid.
Yes, yeah.
And they do say this is experimental-ish. And I think they still say that. I checked it probably just a month ago, 6 weeks maybe, and they still say, you know, just check that this is supported by your users. But the fact that they released that gave me a bit of confidence to use it. And I've been using you've used it, Mark, haven't you, in a couple of live projects now? I've been using it the last three live projects, I think.
Flexbox. Yeah. I kind of got into it quite early.
But with Grid, it's interesting the fact that it's been done. What did you say? It's been developed behind browser flags.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty much everything now, any new stuff is going to be developed behind browser flags. So you have to actually go and enable the flag for the things to work in your browser while it's experimental, which just means these things don't leak out into production and then change. Because, you know, with a complex spec, something like Grid, you know, it's changed loads. I mean, there's been massive, massive changes. And, you know, even things that have been implemented in browsers, it's then changed and they've had to re-implement. So, you know, because all that's happened behind browser flags, it's not you know, it's not leaking out into production. It's not going to break anybody's website. And kind of not breaking websites is a real problem in the CSS working group, you know, because we've got all of this legacy. And it's, when you think about it, it's quite amazing that, you know, a website that you, you know, someone built in 97, 98 still works. And that's because, you know, we don't go and break stuff. But that does make developing new CSS kind of difficult, because you can't go and just say, well, oh, well, it was all terrible what we did 10 years ago. We know much more now, so let's just change it all, because you can't do that.
You can't pull too hard on that particular ball of string, I guess,
yeah.
Can you?
Yeah.
So we mentioned frameworks then. So when Grid's actually available, what do you think that's going to mean for framework, particularly sort of given that I think some of these kind of, some sort of frameworks do...
Grid systems, I mean.
Grid systems, they can be quite difficult to learn. When I was first learning CSS, I kind of avoided learning them because they just seemed a little bit, they just seemed like it was quite a mountain to climb. So when Grid's around, what do you think it's going to be? What do you think the future is going to be for frameworks?
Well, I think the frameworks do an awful lot more than just a grid system. And in fact, you can use a framework for stuff and use your own grid system, or, you know, just write CSS for that yourself. You don't necessarily have to use a framework for its grid. And I think that, you know, people like the idea of having, you know, these frameworks or things they develop themselves that are like a framework. You know, they sort of develop their own sort of internal system. I hope that people will look past, you know, what Bootstrap and Foundation and so on hand them. I don't have any problem at all with the existence of frameworks. You know, we use Foundation a bit as well. What I think is a shame is if people lean so heavily on those things that they forget to look at, like, actually what's happening in CSS. Mm. And kind of, you know, kind of outsource their understanding through somebody else. Basically saying, well, all I'm going to know about CSS is what my framework provides me, and that's kind of a shame, because there's a whole bunch of creativity outside of that, and, you know, absolutely use the frameworks, get stuff up quickly and things. You know, we've all got jobs to do. We certainly do, but I think it's kind of being happy to step outside of that, and sometimes building a site, you know, just with your text editor, just to play around with some, so play around with some examples, or build some code pens, or whatever, just to see what else is out there, you know, outside of that little universe that you're in. And I think that's the same with really any tools. You know, if you're very, very reliant on other people's SAS mixins, for example, you might forget that, oh, out there, there's all this other CSS that you're not looking at. Mm. So, you know, these tools aren't bad. I think they're a good thing generally, because, you know, I'm a business person. We need to do our jobs and get things shipped. And sometimes, you know, the best way is to grab some starting point that's done a load of the work for us. Mm. I mean, ultimately, that's why people, you know, use my products, why they use Perch, and don't, you know, not everyone sat down and going, right, I'm going to build a CMS this morning for you know, I mean, that's why we use any of these things. But yeah, I think with CSS particularly, and because it's so exciting at the moment, there's so many interesting new things. You know, use the frameworks to do your job, and then hopefully you save a little bit of time to just get outside of that and have a play around with some of the new stuff.
Yeah.
What I've done sometimes is I've used Foundation to do something and then thought, that's quite weighty. I mean, I know they're trying to make it smaller, smaller and smaller, but when I've then come to do the second project or the third or the fourth, fifth, tenth, thought, I'm going to use some elements from Foundation. Or the other thing is, I think a lot of people use... This is a bit of an aside, but I think a lot of people will use, say, Bootstrap and just use Bootstrap as it is, not realizing that it's completely modular. Mm. And Foundation is completely modular. And when you, especially with the SAS, if you are building with SAS, if it's Foundation, they're going to include things for things like pricing panels and different sorts of bullets. And you're probably not using them on your sites.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Actually, just not defaulting to the full build can save sort of 80-90% weight of resulting CSS. But yeah. I've often used their mix-ins to then take them apart and then learn more about how it works. Mm. And then build my own.
Yeah. I mean, Foundation's a fantastic bit of work. And I, you know, as I say, we're using it. And what I tend to do is actually comment out, because we use the SAS version, I comment out all of those includes.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so then I'll try and use something. You know, I'll look on the foundation site and think, oh, well, you know, I'd like to use this or whatever. I'll try and use it. Of course, it doesn't work because I haven't got the CSS for it. And so then I have to go and find, oh, right, that comes from this one. And so I'm only enabling the stuff that we're actually going to use.
Yeah, that's
because
exactly what I do.
Because I think, you know, I think that's the thing. You know, you can end up with just all this stuff that you don't need, and actually it's relatively lightweight if you only use the stuff that you need. And of course, you don't have to, as you say, you don't have to use all of it, and you don't have to necessarily say use their grid. You can, you know, write your own stuff, or any of it, you know, you can write your own bits, but just make sure they're not including all this stuff that you don't use.
Yeah,
I'm glad I didn't go for one of those when I was learning, because I think you can end up kind of, you know, a lot of decisions have already been made, haven't they?
Yeah.
You can end up like hobbling your own learning, because you know, you just kind of, you learn how to use the system, but you don't learn sort of what's actually underlying the system. So
yeah, I think it's definitely worth people learning, you know, CSS and HTML, that actually learning that themselves, because as well, you know, it just means that you can then make those decisions. You know what's going on, and you can say, oh, actually, you know, I don't want to use this because it causes this problem or what have you. And you can make decisions sort of better. And you also know when you need to do something that's outside of that framework and say, actually, this isn't a great fit for this job. Yeah. You know, if you can make those decisions is the important thing.
Yeah. Although I have been doing a fair bit of work with people recently that have broken their frameworks to meet a fix. So. But anyway, so back to Grid then. When do you think we'll be able to use it for live projects? When's it actually going to drop?
Right. It is going to be in Firefox, probably, I think, sort of end of the first week of March, 7th or 8th or something. Really? It will be in Chrome about a week later. It will be in Safari when they ship the version that's currently in beta. And that's probably going to be March. So by the end of March, a lot of people are going to find that 70 to 80% of their site visitors have grid support.
That's brilliant.
Which is, and as I say, you know, these implementations are stable. This has been in development for over 5 years. It's not flaky. It's not going to be a Flexbox story. It's not suddenly going to change. We've done the changing. You know, the spec's pretty much finished at this point. You know, the very, very small things that are being discussed now.
Okay, that's really good. So for new projects going forward, that can be definitely considered or built upon.
Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of handling support for the 30%, are we talking polyfills and things like that, or just sort of checking that they're handled?
Like, you don't want to be polyfilling your layout, really. So CSS has got this thing called feature queries with at supports, which look a bit like media queries. So basically you can say, you know, at supports, display grid, and then write grid code. So that's the way to deal really with a lot of support. You'll find that, you know, you can write, I mean, if you've got a fairly simple layout, you can then build on top of that with grid. You could maybe use some Flexbox and then build on top of that with grid to really tighten it up. The other thing to look at is where you can use grid for smaller UI elements. It tends to be a lot easier to use modern stuff for kind of small areas to kind of really tighten it up and finesse it than it is to say, I'm going to build my whole layout with grid layout.
Yeah.
Because then you kind of have, okay, you might have 30% of people who don't have a layout. That's probably not what most people are going to go for. But if you're talking about, you know, laying out a form with, I don't know, inline block or something, and then overwriting that with grid properties, so the form looks really great for people who've got grid but is perfectly usable for everybody else, that's, I think, where you can start to use this stuff very effectively. So I think that's, you know, you don't need to think of it as, oh, it's got to be everything or nothing. Just, you know, start using it for some elements, for really tightening things up. And just make sure, obviously, that, you know, you test the browsers that don't have support.
Okay. How quickly do you think that 30% is going to shrink?
It's difficult to know, because it's going to depend on your sites. I mean, I have sites. I mean, like my personal site, the Perch website, for instance, will probably have 95% by April.
Yeah, this is the user.
So, yeah, it really, really depends on the type of users that you have. The other thing to do is split your mobile users from your desktop users. quite often. If you tend to have people who are on, you know, modern Android or iPhones or what have you, they may well have far better support, and you can do some neat things, even if you have to do older stuff for the desktop. So, you know, within your media queries or what have you, you could be using some grid for small screens or what have you. So it is just looking at your stats, really. It depends who you work with, because, you know, there are places where you've still got tons of, like, ancient IE, if you just happen to deal with a certain sector. So it's, you know, it's going to be different for everybody, really.
But your advice would be to sort of embrace it and handle those that can't.
Yeah,
queries, was it? No, not device queries. What was it?
Feature queries.
Feature queries, yeah.
Feature queries are fantastic, and they've got really good browser support. So nothing... So basically anything new that appears in CSS sort of from now on, you can use a feature query to detect whether the browser has that, which is great, because it means you can actually play around with some new stuff, add some little touches with new stuff without causing any problems to older browsers. It just sort of, it's a bit like using Modernizer, but it's right there in your CSS. So, you know, there's a lot you can do. And I think, you know, the way we work with browsers is changing, because, you know, the browsers mostly are evergreen, so they're updating all the time. And I think if you're building new stuff, there really is a benefit to the business that you're building that for, to be using new stuff and say, well, look, you know, people are going to grow into this. And you can also see what's upcoming in browsers. You know, you can go and have, you know, get Firefox Nightly or Chrome Canary or what have you, and you'll find there's all sorts of really neat stuff a version or two versions down the line. And if you're talking about building websites that are going to hang around for 3 or 4 years, you know, you don't want to hobble it to, like, IE9 tech, you know?
No.
So I think, you know, if there's particularly when there's a business case for it, or when, you know, it's going to really slim down the amount of code you need, or it's going to make things possible that aren't currently possible, and there are things in grid that we just can't do with other layout methods. I think it's, you know, it's kind of, there is a case to make for, well, look, more and more people are going to have this.
Yeah.
Now would be a good time to talk about how we can learn this. So should we do our tool star?
Yeah, okay.
Cool. So this is our tool star, where we talk about a tool or app or thing which is useful for us as web developers. And as we've been talking about grid, we have a learning resource for grid. So Rachel, you've got that for us, haven't you?
Yeah, so about a year and a half ago, I started putting together a bunch of just small examples for using grid, because people were saying to me, oh, it's really complicated. I've looked at the spec. It's terrifying. And I'm like, no, it's not terrifying. Look, it's, you just do this. And I'd sort of build these little examples for people at conferences and things, and say, look, you know, this is how simple it is. And so I started putting these things together on a site which I've called Grid by Example. There's a whole bunch of small examples. There's also a lot of video now. I sort of went through a good chunk of the spec before Christmas this year and just recorded small videos sort of showing how it works, so people can have a look. So yeah, that's something I'll continue to add to that as people ask me questions, and hopefully that's useful for people, just because I think the best way to learn this stuff and to learn most things, you know, on the web is actually to get your hands on the code and start playing around. So everything's on CodePen, so you can go and fork the examples and play about with them.
Yeah, sure. So on the CodePens then, for them to work, will you have to enable flags on the browsers that you're using the CodePen? Okay, excellent.
Yeah, at the moment, of course, once we get into March and these things start shipping, they'll all magically work. but yes, there's also information at gridbyexample.com/browsers. I try and keep that up to date with what's happening in browsers and how to enable the flags, and also, you know, links to the what they call the meta bugs for each implementation. So that's the sort of list of bugs that they're working through to get it live. So you can go and have a look and see the status in different browsers and things.
Sure. Okay. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. So that's gridbyexample.com.
Cool.
Okay. So this is the jukebox section. Now we've let Rachel go because she said she doesn't listen to music while she works. So, you know, didn't have a choice for the jukebox, which is fair enough, but we weren't going to make her sit through our drivel. but still, I think in the honour of her and Drew and Perch, which is a Bristol-based operation, we're going for Bristol or nearby artists.
Because we've both got a Bristol connection, haven't we?
We have.
I used to go to Bristol a lot, see all the bands and stuff,
yep.
Into the Bristol sound.
I lived there for quite a while and then moved to Portishead after a short 10-year break in London. And did you live in Portishead?
I lived in Portishead very briefly.
Okay.
I got a job with, I don't know if it was a time before startups, but I got a job working for a little tech startup run by these two impossibly enthusiastic men. And they offered me a job. I relocated and I moved in. And then every Monday it was like, oh, we need another week just to get things together. And then that happened for about 5 or 6 weeks. And so I went home.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, so actually the job didn't...
Didn't happen.
Didn't take off.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a sad story.
But it's okay. No, I got to go to Portishead, which was ace.
So what's your track?
So my track is by Portishead. I used to joke back at the time that when you listen to Portishead music, you can understand why it sounds the way it does when you go to Portishead. I think it's changed a bit, hasn't it? It's been
massively redeveloped.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole harbour area and everything.
Because it was all pebble dash and tears when I moved in.
Yeah, they've made it what does someone call it? Not the bunk bed of Bristol, the something. What do they call it when it's the place that a lot of people will live in and then commute into? The sleeping something?
I have no idea.
There's a phrase. Or maybe they just made it up and I believed it.
I don't know. I'll
dormitory.
Dormitory
of Bristol. Yeah, that's the word. People sleep.
We got to see Ben's brain work in real time.
Again.
but anyway, so my track by them is Glory Box from their 1994 album Dummy. And it's kind of slightly... was quite different to the rest of the stuff on that album. It's lots of strings and it's kind of almost a bit of a crooning track by Beth Gibbons, I think, the vocalist. And I went to see Portishead in Tea in the Park, which is a big old festival in Scotland. And it's on my list of like top 3 or 4 gigs because they were amazing. And I remember that during like some of the instrumental breaks, Beth Gibbons would come down and like shake people's hands in the crowd and thank them really sincerely for coming out. And she was, it was great. It was really good. So there you go. So my track is Glory Box by Portishead.
Okay.
I'm so tired of playing with this bow and arrow. Gonna give my heart away, leave it to the other girls to play. For I've been a temptress too long.
Good album. We already got something from that album on one of the playlists.
I think we have,
yeah. It's good. We'll fill it up eventually. We'll be all bored of Canada, Portishead and Massive Attack.
I think they could all go on, actually, couldn't they?
Yeah. I am going with a Tricky track. So Tricky of Massive Attack fame and Fifth Element fame.
Oh, yeah.
Starring role. It's so funny when you hear a very Bristol accent. He's from Knowle West.
Yeah.
Which is one of the most Bristolian parts of Bristol.
I remember when I used to look around there a bit, going home and driving through Knowle West.
Quickly. Quickly.
Well, somebody actually reaching over back in the days before central locking and locking all the doors of the cars, all the cars in. And I was like, what are you doing? That's ridiculous. And then you drive through and you're like, oh, okay, I understand. When you see like the burned out cars on the street and stuff, you're like, fair enough.
Yeah.
But I think it's better now though, isn't it?
I don't know. Haven't been back.
Please, no one from Knowle West come and get us.
Yes.
It's for our international listeners, I guess it would be the Bristol equivalent of like Compton or somewhere like that. It's kind of, it's a bit infamous, isn't
it? Yeah, it is a bit. I don't know what it would compare to. And I don't know what it's like now.
And I think some of the things that come out of there are a bit apocryphal, aren't they? But anyway, who knows? Yeah. Well, who knows?
Yeah. So Tricky kind of branched off a little bit because he felt a bit restricted, I think, by Massive Attack. He wanted to do his own thing. And I think it was his debut album called Maxine Quay.
Yeah.
Named after his mum, we just found out.
Yeah.
And the track is Black Steel, which is a cover of Public Enemy's kind of almost like a political protest song, wasn't it, called Black Steel in the Hour of Chaos.
Yeah.
But interestingly, Public Enemies, as you'd expect, is rapped, can I put it that way?
Yes.
Yeah, but whereas this is sung by Tricky's, they were him and who was it?
Martina Topley-Bird.
Yeah, that's it. The two of them feature on most of the tracks on the album, don't they?
Yeah.
And she sings it really well, but it's really laid back. It's all a bit sort of smoky, and I love it. And then it breaks down into a kind of like a heavy rock bit in the middle, and then breaks back to a kind of downbeat, lo-fi style tune. I'm just going to stop talking about it and play a bit. Cold sweating as I dwell in my cell. How long has it been? They got me sitting in a state pen. I gotta get out, but I thought was done before. I contemplated a plan on the cell floor. I'm not a fugitive on the run, but a brother like me began to be another one. Public enemy serving time. They drew the line, yo. They criticized me for some time. Alternative players for that one.
Yeah, the album's really good. It's got some really good standout tracks. Some of it I found a little, some of Tricky's work is a little inaccessible.
Some of it's quite dark. And it's supposed to be.
Yes.
Some of the topics are pretty...
I think he's quite troubled, so he kind of addresses a lot of that in his music.
But, yeah.
We haven't heard, like, he talks to me in bed. I think I haven't heard much from him, sort of, like, I think he still records and stuff. No, he's still producing work and stuff like that, but just not quite in the mainstream as in the mainstream as he was back then. But, but yeah,
cool. Okay. So let's get back to the sign off, I guess.
Yeah. And as we've got Rachel here, we can't let her escape without talking about Perch. So there are new things coming up with Perch this year, aren't there?
Yes, we have Perch and Runway 3 very, very close to launch. So, yes, that's all quite exciting.
Because you were Perch 2.9 was going to be the thing, wasn't it? But you skipped that and went straight to 3. What was behind that decision?
Really, because of the interface change. We've redesigned the UI for Perch and Runway 3. In fact, it relates a lot to our previous discussions. We're using a lot of Flexbox in that, even though we have to make sure it works in fairly old versions of IE, because obviously people who use Perch, some of their clients are using IE. But we've redesigned this UI. And the thing with major version releases, you kind of want to make big changes in a major version, because it means that people can kind of brief their clients. You know, if you're going to go and upgrade all your sites, and a lot of Perch updates, we work very, very hard that Perch updates don't break anything. Mm. You know, we don't tend to have any problems of people running an update and finding everything breaks. We've never had that as a problem. And we want people to be confident. But with a UI change, even though everything's still going to be there, they'll be able to do all the things they could do before, things might have changed location. It's going to look a bit different. You know, there's a different menu and... So we kind of wanted people to know that it's a free update from Perch 2, so they can just go and install it. We wanted them to know that this is going to be different, and you might want to brief your client. You might want to do this update at a point at which you know you're going to be going to see them and can, you know, sort of show them the new UI and things before you make the change. So that was really why making it at Perch and Runway 3 was that we wanted to kind of signify as this is a bigger change than usual.
Sure.
So that was really the sort of main drive behind that.
Excellent. So what kind of changes can we look forward to?
Well, we've made the UI really responsive. We'd kind of had to patch in responsiveness because Perch predated kind of responsive design. We shipped around the same time as the iPhone. So it was kind of before all of that. And it was certainly before anyone was wanting to manage their site from a phone. Mm. And of course, people do now actually use mobile devices, phones and iPads and so on, and other tablets as their primary computing device. So we wanted to make it so that was kind of a first-class citizen, that people, if they wanted to manage their content from a phone, they should be able to do that. And so there was all sorts of things that just needed changing for that, because, you know, our menus didn't work great at very small sizes. We'd kind of patched in some stuff so you could kind of do things, but it wasn't a first-class citizen. So that was... that's a sort of big thing. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's been improved around that, and also the groundwork for things that we're going to add a bit later in the release cycle. There's a whole load of new APIs for people making their own add-ons, which people in the beta seem to really like. Just a whole bunch of stuff that had come up that people wanted fixed and changed, and lots of little editing workflow things. And there's just like a whole raft of relatively small things, but mm-hmm. I think everyone who installs it is going to, who's an existing purchaser, is going to be like, oh, they fixed that thing that, that, you know, there's a whole load of little things that add up to quite a lot, you know, over the system. And a lot of those that have been enabled really by us changing the UI, because there were some things we just couldn't do with the existing UI. Mm-hmm. We couldn't solve those problems with the UI that we had. So we've been able to, if we haven't dealt with it yet, it's probably because we've put the groundwork in to do so, you know, in a future release. There's a whole bunch of things that have been enabled by the changes we've made.
Excellent. So I know you don't really do release dates, but is that something which is going to be sort of coming reasonably soon?
Reasonably soon, yeah. I mean, I think we're up to beta 12 now with, so our registered developers have got the betas. We run proper betas, as in we send stuff out and we ask for feedback and we implement based on feedback. So that's one of the reasons why we don't give release dates, because if, right. you know, at any point someone could bring something up, we'd be like, yeah, that needs dealing with. and we want, you know, we want people who are spending their time testing to actually be able to incorporate their feedback and not just be like, oh, you know, oh, it's fine, we're going to just release this anyway. So that's been, you know, part of that is making sure that we do take on board the feedback, and the group we've been testing have been great and given us lots of information. So there's that. And there's also a whole bunch of other stuff that has to be done before we release it. Like, there's all the documentation has to be updated. All the videos, the tutorial videos, are now all wrong because the UI has changed. Mm-hmm. So there's a kind of a whole bunch of stuff that we want to get in place before we ship this, because otherwise people download it and they're like, oh, but how, you know, what do I do? Because it looks different, you know, from the videos, and a lot of people rely on that stuff. So yeah, that's there's a lot to do, but we are close. We can't wait for people to have it, really. You know, I've got it running on some of my sites and I'm like, yeah, you know, really want to get this out for everyone.
Yeah, I've quite enjoyed seeing some of the UI previews. And it's how do you manage to get it all done? Because because Perch by itself could be the work of like the full-time work of a small team, and you do that and so many other things. I mean, how do you manage to fit it all in?
I don't sleep. true story. yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, we'd love to get to a point where we had other people doing stuff here. There's so much more that we would like to be able to ship. Pretty much everything that we ship, there's like 10 things that we wish we could ship. And because we're, you know, we're bootstrapped, we don't have any funding. Essentially, it's, you know, if people buy licenses, if we sell more copies of Perch, we can do more stuff because we'll be able to afford, you know, getting other people in to do some of this stuff, particularly around the add-ons. It'd be great to have someone sort of looking after those and doing updates to those and things. Mm-hmm. It basically comes down to Perch supporting itself as an enterprise. We are very don't want to sort of take on funding or that kind of stuff, because it changes the dynamic. Because for us, Perch is us and the customers, and what we can do to make things better for the people who use it. And that's kind of how we want to keep it, really.
I guess that, from putting insomnia to good use as well.
What
have you got? And just briefly on with Perch Shop, because that was released last year. Anything? Any news for that this year?
There's going to be some things we want to add to that. There's a lot of people using Shop. We've seen lots and lots and lots of interesting sites. All the add-ons are having update for the new UI, because that's, again, all changed. And these new APIs we've got for the add-ons to use. So Shop's been updated. I think the beta tests have got Shop now. So in itself, it's obviously been refreshed for the UI. And there are things we'd like to add in the future. There's a whole list of things. I mean, e-commerce, you know, it's like a never-ending story, you see. there's so many different things that people might possibly want. I think that'll probably have some new things later in the year once we've got three out there.
Excellent, good stuff. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us, Rachel. It's been very illuminating. So if people wanted to follow you or to find out what you were involved in, how would they do that?
I am at Rachel Andrew on Twitter. That's a good place to find me. I'm usually there, mostly talking about CSS, sometimes talking about cats. I am rachelandrew.co.uk is my website, and that kind of links to various things that I'm doing. And Perch is at grabaperch.com.
Thank you very much for joining us. So this show will be up on our website, relativepaths.uk, with a comment thread. So drop in and leave us a comment or two. We are Relative Paths on Twitter, on Facebook, and for what it's worth, on Google Plus. any reviews or ratings in your podcatcher of choice are very well received, because they help us keep the podcast afloat and help other people find out about us. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back in your ears in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.